Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is the interview with Dr. Betsy Zhang on December 27, 1981, in Los Angeles.
Yeah, you were talking about the...
When I first went to Stanford, it was still what we call the BC days, you know. Before it was integrated so much.
Uh-huh.
It was limited to 500 women.
Mm-hmm.
When Stanford established, they were awfully afraid Stanford University would become a ladies' seminary.
Uh-huh.
And there were 25, and the whole thing was limited,
mm-hmm.
the whole university, 2,500 men and 500 women only. And it meant only one out of 20 Chinese or any woman,
mm-hmm.
even with good college recs, couldn't get in.
They got sort of quota.
And one of their criteria for entrance was not a straight A or A plus record. They would rather have you a B plus record, but with leadership.
I see.
And Stanford's idea was, we want to hear from you after you leave Stanford. We don't want back what we gave you in our lectures. We want you to be able to think on your own feet.
Uh-huh.
And when you need information, know where to find it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was Stanford's slogan. And in those days, very few Chinese had a chance to be among the student body leadership.
Uh-huh.
And I was fortunate, not because I was such a leader or so bright, but I happened to be the dean's pet. She took to me because of Miss Cameron.
Uh-huh.
And she embraced me and liked me from the start. And my classmates said, oh, let's ask Bessie to be our president. Let's nominate her. Then our class will be able to get everything we asked for. And in those days, there was a school, a normal school, and girls' high school at the same time called Lux.
Mm-hmm.
So I often laugh about it and say, I'm a Lux girl.
Lux,
you know,
girl.
The old
uh-huh.
ad,
uh-huh.
the Lux soap?
Yeah. This is in
because,
San Francisco?
Yes, I went to an endowed school, not public school.
So mm-hmm. Lux is a private school?
Private school.
Endowed. Not fully private.
I
by
see.
Lick, Wilmerding, and Lux.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay.
So I went to three high schools at the same time.
How did you manage?
Well, the interesting thing about it is, Lux was a normal school,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time a high school.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls' school, Lux proper, we had household chemistry,
mm-hmm.
not college chemistry. Then we had laundering,
mm-hmm.
and we had housekeeping, dietetics, institutional management. And then we did art, and in the art classes, we studied our body types and designed our own clothes and made it in the sewing department. And in the millinery department, we designed what hats were right for our body build and everything, and then executed it in the millinery department. In those days, we even had to make buckram frames and wire frames for hats, and mold them. But I was the first girl to say, hey, we're not going to be homemakers, we're going to be career girls. So my class was the first class to say, no, we won't make the tailored suits with all the gourds, you know,
uh-huh.
Cut very intricately. And then also refused to make the infant's layette. We're not having babies. We're not going to go out in the world and contribute.
Uh-huh. That's quite a revolution. You're talking about career women,
you know, because
professional instead of homemaking.
In the 1718, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my class was the first class to graduate at Christmas. Mm-hmm. two classes graduating in 1 year, mm-hmm. a Christmas class and a June class. Uh-huh. So I was a 22X. And because I once I got to be president, well, then I was reelected and was president for 2 years. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have money to go to Stanford. So I went to junior college in San Mateo. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the, charter members, let's say, of that college. Uh-huh. We had an old beautiful Victorian home. Mm-hmm. In which we started the Junior College of San Mateo. But I think they call it San Mateo College now.
Yeah, I think so.
Uh-huh. I think so. Uh-huh. And one day when I went back to lunch for the woman that I was working for, she would get the lunch, and then I'd eat it, and then walk back to school. And while I was home with Mrs. Gilchrist on Tilton Avenue, I came back and I was elected the only woman Board of Control.
Cool.
I didn't know a thing about it. But one of the bad boys, who was always on the hot seat and in trouble, McGee was his last name, I can't remember his first name, so many years ago. I said, well, what in the world made him nominate me? Well, he got up, the girls told me, got up and made a speech. He said, he was always in trouble, but he knew I'd be fair. And just. See, being a Chinese girl, I wouldn't be interested in him. Mm-hmm. And so he knew that I'd be impartial.
Were you the only Chinese in the school at that time?
And in Siskiyou County, where I spent 9-10 years with my sister, because I refused to go to China when I was 5. Mm. I went to live with a married sister, and my entire family went back there.
Mm-hmm. Your father let you? Stay,
well, you know. I don't know how I got away with it, but I did. It
was 5 years old.
Just a stroke of luck, or God himself was helping.
My mother went back.
And his mother was just a baby in arms.
I see.
And I was old enough in 1906, the year of the fire, to have measles and smallpox at the same time and get into the earthquake.
Oh, my.
Boy, that was a year.
First, her Hallyu.
Yeah.
That's Hunter's Point, I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then there were too many Chinese there. Uh-huh. So we had to go on over to Marin County to China Camp.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you know that? China Camp in Marin County.
Yes.
I know the girl that's there now, Grace Kwan.
Oh, I see.
I think she's still alive. Yeah. And I have connections in Marin County, too. But it was very interesting.
And you stayed with your sister?
I stayed with my sister, but when I was 14 and a half, my father and my only brother that I know personally had another brother. Mm-hmm. But he went to Cuba. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know him. Mm-hmm. And my mother was one of the old-fashioned kind that had the bound feet. Mm-hmm. And when she was married and came to America, they unbind the feet.
Uh-huh.
But the feet never functioned normally again, never became normal in size.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard a very funny tale about her going on a picnic to Strawberry Lake in the Golden Gate Park. Well, apparently in getting into the boat, she had to wear sort of ballet Chinese slippers, those little embroidered slippers,
yes. Mm-hmm.
And she dropped a slipper. And of course, the most terrible thing that could happen to a Chinese woman in those days is to be carried by a man. And she couldn't walk without the other shoe, so she was picked up and carried from the boat onto the shore. And it was the embarrassment of her life, they tell me.
Oh, dear. This was when? Before they went back to China?
Oh, yes.
The
earthquake and fire was April the 18th. 1906,
mm-hmm.
And it was November when they went back.
I see.
And that was when my sister went married. And during that time, very few marriages were love marriages, you know, where they chose their own mates.
Mm-hmm.
So my sister's marriage was one of those arranged matchmaker deals.
Ah, even in the United States.
Oh, very much.
But she was 14.
14, and my brother-in-law was 48. But my matchmaker, who works on percentage, you know,
yeah.
said, no, well, you have a choice of two young men here and this older man. Now, I would advise you to have her choose for her the older man because, well, he has a nest egg and he would be a good provider and he's sown his wild oats and he would be steady and no problem. And the young man would probably make off or wouldn't be responsible. And, but she didn't say she'd get a bigger commission.
And Bessie, did you say we had a relative in Weed, California that was a paymaster in the railroad?
No, that's my brother-in-law, Aunt May's father.
Aunt May's father was what now?
Well, it was a section foreman, they called him.
Did he hire the...
No, here's the point. The Chinese coolies worked on the railroads in California, we all know that.
Mm-hmm.
And my niece's father, my sister's husband. Was a section foreman.
Uh-huh.
Chinese fella?
Yes, Chinese.
Say
yep.
Sing Ma.
Sing Wong.
Sing Wong. Yeah.
And so he became a leader because he could speak pidgin English at least.
Uh-huh.
The others didn't speak at all, or any English at all.
He came from China.
He came from China on a sailing vessel, and so did my father.
Uh-huh.
There were no steamships between here and there in those days. And they took their lives in their hands.
Was this a commercial sailing vessel that they came over on, or something?
I imagine they chartered them.
I see.
And they weren't sure at all that they would get
here.
Get here.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't a Chinese junk or anything, was it?
I wouldn't be surprised if they would. No, I don't think his was.
Uh-huh.
The one that my father came in could have been.
I see.
That I didn't know.
They came out of what, Hong Kong or?
Hong Kong, yes.
Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
So when did your father came?
Well, I wouldn't know that.
It would be like the late.
All I know that I was terribly surprised to learn that, to find my birth certificate signed by Dr. Feel, M.D. And in those days, most of the Chinese and many of the American people only had midwives delivering them. So I asked, I said, well, what did my father do? And then I learned that in the early days, it was quite legitimate to deal in opium and deal in gambling. There were no laws against it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So my father had fingernails this long.
Oh.
And then Jiu Chiang San.
Uh-huh.
And never worked.
Of course, Xiao Bin too, at that time.
Oh, yes, and never worked. And then he smoked a long Chinese pipe, you know.
Uh-huh.
Sekin, Sokin.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And before dinner every night, one or two little teacups of ngape.
Oh, ngape.
Good
yeah.
for
uh-huh.
the circulation.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Uh-huh.
So all that. But and when he came to take me back to China again a second time, I thought, oh, no. My first sister was married at 14 to a man 48 and had a terrible life.
It's
I saw
turn.
All of it. And my sister was 16, my sister Lily, whose daughter is now a nurse
uh-huh.
in Canada, retired just past year.
Uh-huh.
She offered to come over to look after me, but she doesn't drive, so
uh-huh.
I got Mr. Soper to drive for me.
Oh, how nice.
And after my fracture.
Uh-huh.
So I said to myself, oh, I'm ready for the meat market. Oh, no, none of that. Oh. So I said, what shall I do now? And then after one holiday, somebody by the name of Jimmy, one of the boarders, my brother-in-law became, after he was section foreman for the railways. Oh, by the way, he paid those coolie laborers off in gold double eagles. Oh, wouldn't we like a few of those?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And I said, well, how did you carry it, in bags or sacks or cans or what? He said, oh, no, we gave each worker a 12-inch white candle.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have electricity or a flashlight to work by or to live by.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of them got a candle
mm-hmm.
each week.
Mm-hmm.
And when those wooden boxes were empty, then he'd put these double eagles in and they would be handed their weekly pay or bi-weekly pay, whatever
it
was.
Boxes.
In those double eagles, imagine.
Do you know how much they were earning?
No. But in the book called The American River, I have an autographed copy by the author by it. It's very interesting, and those Chinese people did have a hard time. And then one of my patients told me, there are two towns, he's retired, he was a private contractor. And one of my patients, and his wife was a patient, he told me, did you know that there's an I Go California? I said, no. And there's also one called No Go? I said, no. And he said, those are Chinese names given by two Chinese groups. Because all of a sudden the Americans thought that the Chinese were usurping all the good paying jobs, and they started to menace the Chinese and even slay them by the hundreds and even thousands. One group stood up and said, no go, we're going to stand and fight. And the other one said, okay, I go. So they named the town I Go, and the other town No Go. That's Ellis, who told me that.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
I never knew that there was a town, two towns named for the Chinese coolies. And then, of course, you know about the temple in Weaverville.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. See, they missed that. And so they built these beautiful temples. But I was very interested in the fact that the American politicians didn't care as long as their vices and sins didn't touch their people. It was fine. They were going to be friendly with the Chinese. And my sister, my oldest sister, the one that married the older man, her first diamond ring was from San Francisco City Commissioner. My father was on good terms with him.
Oh, yeah. So when she got married,
yes, in those days it was traditional to give a pair of bracelets. You never give one bracelet. And those bracelets were about, some of them were 3 inches wide, 24 carat solid gold. And then, and the bride had to wear everything.
Oh.
Or the donor would be insulted.
Yeah.
And so she wore bracelets up to here and had
to
the prettiest,
elbow and
up to the elbow. And then she had the beautiful, intricate, and most fascinating jewelry for the little bun. They called them gai. And I saw them. But my brother-in-law failed in some business. I forget, I was too young to know what kind. And then he had to sell some of them. So I have just one ring left. And that ring has the sea motif, crabs, lobster, shrimp, and fish.
Oh.
And then it had a little chain and a little bell on it.
Uh-huh.
And they wore it on the last finger and it rang very daintily.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I had. And I wore it after my sister died. And then I outgrew it and I had to have it cut, so it's cut. It's never been repaired. But the gold is a little bit worn. Because 24 karat gold doesn't wear well, it's too soft. So that's the only memento I have. She gave me her diamond earrings and let's see, what else? And her diamond solitaire. And that stone dropped out when I was at Miss Cameron's. I had the ring for many years, but I lost the stone. And then the pair of diamond studs I gave to her two children. One to the son and one to the daughter. She died in the great flu epidemic.
Died young.
Oh, very, very young. 20, of course, at one time I thought it was very ancient. She was 26. My goodness. See, when I was young, I remember being at the town doctor's home and heard Mrs. Tebby say, us girls, why, we nearly died. My goodness, those girls, those women, 25 to 27, are calling themselves girls. Well, it was terrible. But it was very interesting. There were no unions in those days.
In the time you remember, how many Chinese were up there in Wee?
We were the only ones.
Plus the coolies?
No, the coolies weren't there.
I see.
They were gone then.
Yeah.
And my brother-in-law's business was contracting for the boarding houses and the cooks for the Weed Lumber Company.
I see. Uh-huh. Were these Chinese now? Or
all Chinese. But there's no Chinese in Weed now.
Yeah,
or Wairika.
So. At that time.
But my sister was buried in 1918 after the flu epidemic up there. And there was a Chinese cemetery. And I went up there about 10 years ago. And my school friend, Frank, who calls me once in a while, and I call him, we've been friends 70 years. And he's the only person who knows where it is because it's not marked. The Vandals took down the interesting Chinese plaques, the headstones, and they destroyed the little, what would you call it, sort of a barbecue thing. A little fireplace
for
burning the clothes and the things for the dead to take into the next life. And the incense and all.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, well, we're thinking of restoring it. So then I gave them a check to help out. And then some dentist or someone bought that property and wouldn't let them restore it. And they were going to give me back my check. I'm still waiting. So I said to Frank, hey, I never got back for my check for that cemetery. And he said, I'm sure they did. I said, no, I remember who the secretary was, Mrs. Brown or Miss Brown, and I met her, you had her come over, but I never got the check back. But now he told me about a month or 6 weeks ago, he said they're going to restore that cemetery.
Oh, good.
And
good.
That he remembered about 10, 15 years ago, the last Chinese buried there.
Oh.
And that they were very fond of it. But we were the only Chinese family.
Uh-huh.
So I've never been race conscious.
Uh-huh.
And hardly realized that I was really Chinese. So that's why all through life I've had no problems.
So in your early years.
And the Chinese Historical Society wanted me to tell about my hardships and what race prejudice I had run into.
Uh-huh.
And in my life, I fortunately never ran into any because I never projected anything,
mm-hmm.
but just like any other child. I know when I was ready to graduate from Stanford, one of my classmates who just retired from the Hunting Library, she was second in command in the Huntington, Doc took me to her home in Los Angeles, and then the other girls, Stanford girls, gave me what they call a progressive party because I couldn't stay long.
Mm-hmm.
So it's do you know about the progressive parties?
No, why don't you tell us?
Oh, well, do you know about it?
I remember the name, but I forgot the details of what
The progressive, each one wanted to give a party for me. And since I couldn't stay long, they had to get together and everybody give a party. And one would start with the first course and the next course and so on. But we were chaperoned by the girls' parents.
Oh.
In those days,
yes.
The girls didn't go out in cars with boys, not
That's
nice
right.
girls.
No.
Uh-huh. So.
And you had hours too, I would imagine.
Oh, it began at 7:30 or 8 o'clock and never ended until after 12 or 1 o'clock.
Oh, they were late.
That would have been horrendous if we had not been chaperoned.
Right.
So, but a progressive party means you start the soup or cocktails at one home, and then the next home would have the salad, and the next home would have the entree,
mm-hmm.
and so on. So it went on through the night.
Ah.
That's why they call it a progressive party.
Sounds like fun.
Well, then she took her mother, was a Baltimore Belle, and her father was an attorney, and nearly got into that Teapot Dome thing. But in that he was an egghead and a man of culture,
mm-hmm.
he said, no, I don't know too much about money. I'd better not get involved. and he just escaped by a hair.
Oh, yeah.
That scandal.
Yes, indeed.
So it was very interesting. And so they took me then, after the exams and after senior week. At senior week, we were very busy with exams and the social life. Mm-hmm. And Lou Henry Hoover.
Yes.
Herbert Hoover's wife was at Dr. Ray Lyman Wilbur's, the president's house, and was in the receiving line. And we got to meet her personally. And then I was invited again to the president's house on another occasion when he came back from a trip to China. Oh, he was so thrilled and so excited. He said, the true democracy is in China.
Is that right? Why did he say that?
Why? Because Gode Honlin examinations. Uh-huh. You can be a poor farm boy.
That's right.
But if you have it, you are entitled and you worked your way right up. They don't bar you from it. No discrimination if you have the IQ.
Uh-huh.
In those days, Stanford.
And he came back with one of those examination papers. And that was the thrill of his life.
Oh,
he treasured that. He said, that's true democracy.
Uh-huh. Compared to some of
no matter how poor, you were on an equal basis if you have the brains.
There were a lot of Chinese.
So he gave a dinner for all the Chinese men students. And I was the only girl.
You were actually the only woman's Chinese
woman
student.
There were one or two Chinese girls. One in particular, I remember, called Xu Xu Lin. And the girls used to laugh about it. They said, now how are we going to remember that name? Oh, Xu Lin. They connected with
Xu.
Because her name was Xu Xu.
Xu Xu.
And Singlam,
Xu
Xu Lin.
So
if they could remember shoes and then Lin, then they connected and could remember her name. But she only came for a postgraduate course.
I see.
How many native-born Chinese were going to Stanford at that time?
Were you about
the only one?
No, I think George was there from, what was his name? I mean, his town. Not Hermiston. I forget. But anyway, he was the only native boy. Tom Wu, did you ever hear of him? Chen Baxing, the Chinese that got into trouble and escaped.
Uh-huh.
Well, Chen Baxing's son-in-law.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I see.
Tom Wu.
Tom Wu.
He was from Canton in Hong Kong. And of well-to-do parents. But he was more than the 4 years. You know about the joke. One man said to the other, oh, I hear your son is college bred, and the other working man said, oh yes, a 4-year loaf. So Tom Wu was a 6-year loaf. He didn't want to go back to China because they wanted to go back to be married.
I see.
Because you see, the duty of every parent was to see that their sons and daughters are married and married well before their demise.
Right.
So that was what my parents were pushing.
Uh-huh. So actually your father came back?
No, when I was 14 and a half, almost 15, my brother and my father was going back. My father was going back for the last time.
Oh, I see.
He made quite a few trips, and each trip a few $1,000. And a few $1,000 in those days was money.
Yeah. Oh, so he was actually going back and forth
the
business.
And yes, and also building up a little nest egg over there. And,
So you would see him.
And he built the first two-story house with windows. I didn't know with windows meant something. But apparently in the hinterland, a house with a wooden floor and windows was something.
Must be glass window then.
I don't know. I guess so. I never asked about the details.
Uh-huh.
But then my second sister was married at age 16 to a very well-to-do family. But the reason she was yanked out of school and married at 16 was because it was such a good prospect. There was a great deal of money there. And those were very fancy weddings, you know, a long procession.
Oh.
That was in Ta-China?
Yes, uh-huh. In the Chinese village.
Uh-huh.
And then they gave the bride everything, mm-hmm. including her little maidservant, uh-huh. little girls, you know. And everything, her clothing, her kitchen utensils, uh-huh. all the needs of the bride were given. And then, of course, the so many cakes mm-hmm. and all those arrangements. But the strange thing is, even though it was already 1906 and after the fire, my sister's wedding was very Chinese. That's your grandmother's wedding. And then they arranged, it was arranged by a matchmaker.
Uh-huh. Actually, your mother came over from China to marry your father?
Yes, she married in China, and mm-hmm. then he had her brought over.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
After his first wife died.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And the first wife only had the one child,
uh-huh.
The brother that I never knew.
Uh-huh.
But it was very strange to me, and I remember, even though I was quite young, I remember them hiring a woman to help her to Hoi Tan Cheng. Do you know anything about that? She is to pretend that she didn't want to leave home.
Uh-huh.
She did not wish to marry.
Mm-hmm.
And she was heartbroken that she must leave.